Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. Hope everyone's doing good. Coming to you live from a, well, not really live, but coming to you podcast form from a undisclosed location somewhere in Seacoast, New Hampshire. Hope you guys have had a great week. Have a good weekend coming up. We have another UFC event. Seems every single Saturday night there's one on FS1, and this weekend is no different. Coming to you from Portland, Oregon, UFC catchweight, we'll call it, and we'll talk a little bit about that and all the crazy news of the week, including UFC 205, Jose Aldo's retirement / contract dispute, whatever you want to call it, and a bunch of other stuff as well with the one and only Danny Acosta. We welcome Danny back to the show after almost about a year or so we had him on, and he is with SiriusXM, and we talked about all kinds of stuff, like I mentioned, and it was a really good conversation with a little bit of overtime. That just means more content for you. So without further ado, let's get right to the conversation with Danny Acosta of SiriusXM. Well, as you know, the welcome mat exists here on the doorstep of Josh Nason's Punch-Out for a reason. We like to welcome back old guests, and we're doing that again this week. We go out to the West Coast, sunny California this week to have a very special guest, someone we like here around here very much. He's a radio host on SiriusXM Rush 93. He's also, you've read him all over the place, Sure Dog, Vice Sports, MMA Junkie, Fox Sports, the list goes on and on, as they say. Again, we head out to San Francisco, California to talk to the one and only Danny Acosta. And Danny, thanks for coming back.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on. It's always a pleasure to take the time to talk some fights.
So I got to ask you, I was surprised when I saw the list today of all the celebrities that have now apparently have bought into the UFC. I didn't see your name on that list. I was shocked by that.
I'm not quite at that level. I'm still trying to afford a one bedroom in San Francisco. So I'll cross that threshold and then maybe you'll see me on a celebrity list investing in a $4.2 billion company. But right now, you know, I'm taking the snail's pace. I'm going the small route.
Well, maybe someday. Maybe someday we'll get you on there. But yeah, that was it's been a weird week in the sport for sure. And that was kind of one of those things that came out of left field, right? Is this whole list of all these celebrities from all different walks of life. Everyone from, I think, Tom Brady to Jimmy Kimmel to Maria Sharapova and all these random celebrities. And now apparently they're also bought into UFC as well. This is a pretty strange days, isn't it?
It is. It's very surreal. However, the same time, I feel like it just makes sense as to how this all went down. If you're WME, IMG, and they haven't been around very long, you know, obviously WME has been around for a long time, but the merger is only a few years old. They're buying up all these properties. That's a huge part of their portfolio, is developing these businesses like the PBR, which is the bull riding organization, and now the UFC. So when they are looking to, you know, pay out $4.2 billion to buy Zufau and, you know, pay Dana White his share and, you know, give Joe Silva enough to ride off into the sunset and everything else that went along with this massive deal, the biggest deal in sports history, they could just go to their ultra wealthy clients like Ben Affleck, Serena Williams, Adam Levine, Conan O'Brien, say, hey, do you want to put $50 million that you're not using into this investment and you own a piece of it? It's just an easy get for them. And the Ari Emanuel quote of, well, I knew that they liked the UFC because they asked for tickets. I mean, that's a PR 101 right there. You can't teach that kind of expertise.
Yeah, it is. You know, this first few months, obviously, you know, when sales of this magnitude happen, it takes a while for things to kind of settle in, right? Because I think so many people expect, like, you know, major things to start from the get-go and all this stuff, but it takes a while. And I think we really don't understand fully what the what the new owners are all about. We haven't had like a big press conference with them yet, and all this. We don't really know outside of kind of trying to understand what their motivations are, obviously to make money and how they think they're going to do that, and Joe Silva leaving, things like that. We really haven't had any kind of big. We don't really know a lot about them, kind of like what their plan is, and I wonder if we're ever going to get that.
Well, I don't think we will. You know, I think the plan will just unfold. But to put it into perspective for mixed martial arts, you know, we had to deal with the CM Punk debacle at UFC 203 about a month ago now. And that was a needle mover, right? CM Punk, it was this big deal, right? Because of his Twitter following and his pro wrestling history. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who is the highest paid actor in all of Hollywood, imagine if he tweets about the UFC on a regular basis, tells fans to buy the pay-per-view. You know, the pay-per-views come in the last few days leading up to the fight. Not only that, you have Charlize Theron and any number of Jimmy Kimmel, you know, Conan O'Brien having UFC fighters regularly on their programs now. Not only that, but not having Bellator fighters on their programs, you know, the Jimmy Kimmels and the Conan O'Briens. I mean, that alone, that celebrity cachet is worth the $4.2 billion or whatever they're going to get out of it. I mean, the UFC is taking on a new level. I think Peter Rosenberg from Hot 97 had a great point in his interview with Dana White. He said that Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz is kind of the first mainstream MMA fight, you know, the sequel, the rematch at UFC 202. And I see that to be true. I think, you know, you look at 2015 was a huge year. I think 2016 is going to actually eclipse that. We've definitely moved into new territory. You could break it up from, you know, the pre-Zuffa days, you know, the no holds barred to Zuffa in their early stage, to the Ultimate Fighter era, to the Fox era. And I think we're on the other side of the Fox era now, and we're in this globalized era. And part of that globalization is having literally the world's biggest stars like Dwayne The Rock Johnson telling you, hey, you need to watch this UFC pay-per-view, because let's face it, the UFC is an uphill battle with a lot of their pay-per-views.
So you bring up a really interesting point, one I didn't think of, about the influence socially that these celebrities have in saying, hey, come watch our investment, right? And I think that's a really great point. I wonder, you know, forever it was like UFC was, I want to say, better than boxing, but just more attractive in these pay-per-views because you got a more rounded card, stars throughout, and we've talked about that before. But I wonder how really like invested in the game that a lot of these, you know, celebrities are going to, how much they're going to actually be into it. Are they just going to really pay attention to just the stars? Is WWE IMG going to try to shift to more a boxing style where simply, you know, the big fight on top and everything else underneath, you know, pales in comparison? I'm interested to see if they want to change fight cards and do they try to make it more accessible to celebrities by trying to really focus on only a few stars at a time. I think it's going to be pretty fascinating to see how that plays out.
Well, I'm glad that you bring that up, because I do believe the boxing model is already in play. I do believe that we already see, you know, one fight, two fight pay-per-views, and they're asking for $60-$70 hard-earned dollars on a regular basis just for those fights. It is not the model of, you know, stacking cards up and down the way there was when there was fewer cards and, you know, the UFC was just flirting with the mainstream back in 2006, 2008, even, you know, down in 2010. So I think they definitely shifted that model, but realistically, they don't have to have these athletes and celebrities, you know, the talent that is under the WME IMG banner. They don't have to care about fighting. You know, they could literally be demanded to be there as part of their press tour for their huge summer blockbuster movie, to sit at a UFC fight that's going to be a big fight for the UFC, shake some hands, take some pictures, tweet out some stuff. You know, I think that is valuable enough because, let's face it, you know, when MMA would have any kind of brushes like this, people would go over the moon for it, because we've been the redheaded stepchild of sports. You know, this is a way to legitimize it. But yeah, conversely, it is shifted toward that boxing model. I mean, I think one of the big impacts that we might see going forward is, like, I just heard Sean Merriman on Sirius XM Rush 93. He was talking about getting major serious offers from different organizations. He didn't mention the UFC. He only said overseas was probably the most serious one he had. But you could expect that NFL guys, you know, people that have great athletic ability, unlike CM Punk, you know, people that you could actually buy into and say, hey, if they actually put some training in, you know, they're a freak athlete. They're 28 years old. You know, it's not a 38-year-old with no athletic ability like CM Punk. I mean, you could see that. I think that might be one of the bigger stories to follow.
Interesting. Yeah, boy, we have interesting times ahead. I think interesting may not be the right word for it. I wonder if, let me ask you for a prediction. Do you think 2017 is going to be a bigger year news-wise than 2016 was?
Wow, that's a great question.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking of all the crazy shit that happened so far this year. I wonder if it's possible, but I mean, we've thought that before. I keep thinking there's going to be this big, like, huge shock at some point that, you know, that people are going to be like, wow, the business has changed towards this. And yeah, what do you think?
I think it should. I think it will. I mean, it really honestly depends on what happens with Conor McGregor and Eddie Alvarez. Mm. You know, no matter what, I think Conor's proven now he's a million buy guy every time on pay-per-view. You know, I was in Las Vegas for UFC 202, the T-Mobile Arena. It didn't have all the seats sold out. You know, I definitely saw a lot of empty seats there. But what I did understand after that is there was not a huge feeling of that fight until after the water bottles and the monster cans thrown at the press conference. So I was in Las Vegas, and it didn't feel as big as other fights have felt on the ground floor there. But it still ended up being the biggest card ever on pay-per-view, and they still – you know, had the biggest gate because of T-Mobile. So T-Mobile Arena coinciding with New York City and Madison Square Garden, the fighting Mecca, I think you have to wager that 2017 will be bigger than 2016. Of course, you need the stars to fill those seats. But, you know, if you're getting all this infrastructure behind it, I mean, look, let's be real. The problem with the UFC has been and might continue to be that they don't want any stars bigger than the brand. Now that you're in the WME IMG era, and they're going to be able to cash in on these fighters as movie stars, cultural phenomenons, I think you're going to have to, and Conor McGregor has held the UFC hostage in this respect and all the credit to him for it, you're going to see these fighters become bigger than the brand. And, you know, if you look at the UFC 205 press conference stage or follow MMA Twitter or anything like that, we've now seen these fighters are willing to hold up the UFC at the curtain, so to speak.
Yeah, perfect segue. It's almost like you've done this radio thing before. UFC 205 is what I want to talk about. The big press conference you mentioned the other day. It was entertaining. It was just fun to watch. We'll get to some of the media questions in a bit, but the heat built between McGregor and Alvarez was it was great. It was just such a newsworthy thing. I mean, everyone else was kind of window dressing in a lot of ways, and we now have in a month's time, just a little bit over a month and a half, we have not a unification bout, but it is a super fight like we've heard about. You know, these are the things that we like: two champions, two weight classes. This is an interesting fight in a lot of ways. It's two guys that know how to talk, one superior in every aspect of talking and promotion, and he is into it. Alvarez is into it. I cannot, you know, not to use the tagline of the show, but I can't wait for this fight. This is going to be a lot of fun.
I mean, if you're a fight fan, you'd be crazy not to love this. All the things aside, I mean, I could really, really nitpick and, you know, say that this should have been there. And I just don't have the time or the energy because they've delivered. Face it. Look, Eddie Alvarez is one of the best stories in American mixed martial arts. You're talking about a world circuit fighter who cut his teeth, proved his worth, had classics, had all-out battles, fun gunfights, you know, fighting the best guys available in Japan and all these different organizations. Coming to the UFC as an underdog, having a rough debut, losing to Cowboy Cerrone, and then starching Rafael Dos Anjos in less than 5 minutes. I mean, he went out there, took his lumps, and he just believed in himself to get over that. That's that veteran gamesmanship. Being an East Coast guy, getting to headline Madison Square Garden against a brash Irishman, you know, a true icon. Like, Conor McGregor is mixed martial arts. If you think about what mixed martial arts is, he is every facet of it. He respects the game. He understands it. He's willing to go to bat against the UFC. He's willing to stand up for other fighters, and he's also willing to demean other fighters and, you know, say the historically negative things about combat sports that you associate it with. I mean, he is the entire package, so I really think you couldn't have a better main event. And I think that Eddie Alvarez will get lost in the shuffle here, but don't sleep on it. I'm not saying from a competitive standpoint, this guy's earned this spot. And I think the problem with the UFC in a lot of cases is, you know, in pro wrestling, it's so much about the chase. It's so much about the climb. And I think the UFC is just so swamped, they miss that a lot of times. I really hope that Eddie Alvarez's story is done justice leading up to this, because Conor can, will hijack a card. He's the number one attraction. If you learn anything in 2016, it's that the biggest pay-per-views are UFC 196, UFC 202, and now UFC 205. What's the common thread? It's Conor McGregor. So all the credit to him, but, you know, there has to be two sides to the story. And that's what I love about this is they are perfect foils of the main event. And, man, that's just the main event. Look at all that breath. I can't even get to the co-main or any wonderful thing that's happening on the undercard. I mean, there's three title fights. You know, Chris Weidman, Frankie Edgar, former champions who literally lobbied the state of New York to make this happen, you know, on the UFC's dime and with the backing of the Fertittas and the UFC and all that. But, man, this is a long time coming, 23 years in the making for this venue. It is the fighting Mecca. Now, Tyron Woodley's been running around telling everybody that, you know, Muhammad Ali believed in himself and people hated Muhammad Ali. And he gets his chance to go to where Muhammad Ali made his name in large and do that for himself. That is a huge way to get yourself over. When the UFC keeps these fighters from getting themselves over, places like Madison Square Garden, cards like UFC 205, allows the fighters to take that power into their own hands and then parlay that at the negotiating table later.
Mm. The show itself went from just over a week ago, it was kind of an eh card. It was just like, this just does not feel like a major thing. There was good fights on the show already, but it didn't really fit. It needed that extra thing kind of put over the top. And then all of a sudden the McGregor fight gets put together and then the Weidman fight comes together. And then kind of just as an added bonus, they put on Khabib versus Michael Johnson on that show, which Dana almost forgot about the press conference. There's so many things going on. This the whole show, how it came together, I had this feeling that Conor had to be signed to something, because when they announced that Rashad Evans, Tim Kennedy, and Frankie Edgar, Jeremy Stephens are going to be on the FS1 undercard, I was like, wait a minute. There has to be something big that they're kind of putting on top there. And they came through. I mean, this show, it's on paper, you know, the on paper thing. This no promotional, all that bullshit aside, this is like the best on paper, the best fight show, best fight card I've ever seen. It's incredible from top to bottom.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I can't even think of anything on paper that would match this. You know, UFC 189, UFC 199, UFC 116, UFC 100. There's been a lot of great cards that have transpired in the octagon. But, yeah, just looking at the three title fights. And, you know, Tyron Woodley, the same thing about Eddie Alvarez. This person's earned that spot, you know. And Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Joanna Champion, she has been fantastic in establishing the 115 division. This is a great fight. I really think – I wrote a column for USA Today Sports MMA Junkie right when the Fox deal happened. And I said that globalization and nationalism would be what defined the UFC next. And, I mean, Madison Square Garden, it's a cultural mecca. It's New York City, the Big Apple. I mean, it's a capital of the world, New York City. So – I mean, this is the UFC's big stage, and they did not miss the opportunity here. Like I said, I could get super nitpicky, and I'm not going to do it. I could be negative about the UFC all day, every day, and this is one instance when I'm just going to, you know, silently applaud. I'm going to give the just due because it does feel like a showcase for the fighters. I mean, look, Jeremy Stephens, Frankie Edgar, these are UFC lifers at this point. The fact that they're on this card, they've earned it. It's true for Chris Weidman. Yoel Romero, he's arguably the most decorated Olympic athlete on the UFC's roster. So you are really getting this next evolution of the sport. Everyone's wearing – they're smart up there on the press stage. You know, you're hearing it from these guys. They're understanding what the game is. And you could credit it to Conor. You could just credit it to the sport itself and the way it's evolved. But overall, this is a resounding success, and the fight is still 6 weeks away, 8 weeks away. You know, it's like we still have a lot of time to get there. Any number of things could happen, as we saw with UFC 200. But, man, you lose a fight or two on this card, you're still swimming in a golden river.
Yep, exactly. What do you make of the whole Al Iaquinta situation? For those that don't know, he was supposed to fight on this show against Thiago Alves, and then he wanted more money. UFC said no, and he's like, I'm out. So he's off the show. It's too bad. It's this, you know, big thing we always talk about with fighters and money and everything. And this is, it's just too bad he's not going to get a chance to be in the show. Over, I don't know how much more he's asking for, but it really sucks that he's not going to be part of this. Because that'd be a great fight and another cherry on top of this whole fight Sunday we got going.
Yeah, I have a lot of empathy for the Al Iaquinta situation here because I remember doing a media day when he was fighting in the Ultimate Fighter finale against Michael Chiesa. Now, you have to remember that was the Ultimate Fighter Live, the one season they did that. That was a season where I was completely terrified of the first death in the UFC in mixed martial arts because the regularity of these guys having to cut weight to get there and make that, it just was insane. It should have never happened. But so my point here, the story is that Al Iaquinta limped his way into this media day, completely beat up from, you know, an excellent fight with Miles Jury on the show and, you know, whatever other fights he had, completely beat up from the taping, went in there, lost to Michael Chiesa. He's not getting paid for that. That's damage it's done to his body that adds up. You know, now he's proven to be one of the better prospects at 155. I mean, man, the guy's got personality. And to me, this just seems like a repeat of the Aljamain Sterling situation. But I guess Al Iaquinta's had some problems. He's trashed a hotel room, things like that have really pissed off the UFC. But there has to be standards, because when you punish a guy like Al Iaquinta saying you're not eligible for performance bonuses, I mean, that could be the difference getting a performance bonus between this is a worthwhile fight and not. So that 50 grand, especially in a landscape with no sponsors, when you have to get 20 fights to get an okay sponsorship payday. I mean, I got to side with Al Iaquinta in terms of the fighters. This is a huge stage. Al Iaquinta, people want to see him on this card because of New York. He is a great prospect. He should be fighting the big names. Remember, he's going to fight Gilbert Melendez. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy who's put in the time, put in the work, and could really be a great commodity for the UFC, a great talent. I think he already is. It's just a matter of that disagreement, bridging that gap. So, yeah, I'm sure the UFC has a lot of valid points, too, that Al Iaquinta shouldn't trash hotel rooms, but they can't just tell one guy, hey, you're not eligible for performance bonuses. Mm-hmm. The fact that his opponent, if he was to fight, would be eligible for a performance bonus, I think it's egregious. You know, you have to have standards in which there's no doubt, there's no gray area in which I came to could actually say, hey, you know what? This isn't for me. You guys are punishing me unfairly, etc. We would know. It'd be cut and dry, or at least a little clear.
There's a lot of interesting stories, and we'll get to a lot of them as we get closer to the show, and hopefully everyone stays injury-free. Is there anyone on the show that you're particularly interested in seeing how their performance is? I'll start with saying this. The Tim Kennedy-Rashad Evans fight, I am super intrigued with, just because Tim Kennedy's been off so long. Rashad Evans going down to middleweight, something that a lot of people thought he should have done for a while. Don't really know what he has left in the tank. No idea what's going on. Tim Kennedy, this is just it could be just a 15-minute grinder, which I kind of expected to be, but this is very interesting between those guys. That's the one I'm interested in right now, other than obviously the main event and so on. That fight's got a lot of intrigue for me. What else stands out for you that you really want to see how the fighter turns out, what type of performance they have?
I am really curious to see if Frank Yeager could get past Jeremy Stephens. Now, the conventional wisdom, obviously, is that Frank Yeager is the favorite here. But make no mistake, Jeremy Stephens has been working for this opportunity. He's got excellent power. We know Frank Yeager gets hit. Jeremy Stephens is the kind of guy, he hits you, you might not get up. So, you know, it'd be a shame in Frank Yeager's world. It'd be a tragic event if he was to get slept in Madison Square Garden when, you know, he's pretty much the indestructible guy. I mean, blue collar, you know, could work his way in and out of every single fight. And, you know, I'm technically superior fighter to Jeremy Stephens, I think, in every facet as well. But it's a dangerous, dangerous fight. And Jeremy Stephens has shown flashes of brilliance. Remember, UFC 189 overshadowed because he had Rory McDonald and Robbie Lawler put on the best title fight the UFC's ever had. And then Conor McGregor closing the show in a very worthwhile fashion. But Jeremy Stephens was a highlight of the year last year with that, fight, and he was overweight and whatnot. So he got buried, but he's been working for these opportunities. He couldn't get past Gub Swanson. You know, he's been at that cusp. So I'm really curious to see how that plays out because obviously these guys have a lot riding on it, and who knows what's happening with the featherweight division. That has another layer of intrigue to that. And then also Tyron Woodley and Wonder Boy. I think Tyron Woodley could be a great spokesman for mixed martial arts, ambassador for the UFC, a great champion, and this is his first title defense. And the same is true for Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Woodley is being made out to be a bad guy because he's speaking his mind. He wants money, whatever it is. But to me, this is really a battle of two baby faces. You know, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, he's got this fan-friendly karate kid style. He's dangerous, excellent highlight reel. He's only lost to, Matt Brown, and he's got excellent win streaks. Beat the hell out of Johnny Hendricks, really did well against Rory McDonald. I mean, the guy is a fighter to watch. If he doesn't get it against Woodley, I'd still say he ends up being the champion someday. So, I mean, that is an excellent title fight. Those are the two fights that I'm interested in the most, outside of the main event.
The Woodley heel thing is just, it is amazing how quickly people just went from not caring about him to all of a sudden really invested to the point that they're just booing him and they don't seem to like him. It is, I don't know if it's a combination of the fact he beat Lawler, the fact he was off for, 16 to 18 months, whatever it was before that. I don't know if the race thing plays into it. It's amazing that some reason this guy seems to be attracting so much vitriol in such a short amount of time. And all he did was simply just win a world title. It's fascinating. It's really weird.
Yeah. He went out and he said that he's gotten some, death threats and,
really raid. Out of all the people that someone directed death threat to, it's like Tyron Woodley. It's incredible, man. I can't get over it.
It is ridiculous, and he said it, it is a racial component to it. And look what America is in 2016. It's like 1966, and obviously things have got better, but there's clearly a lot of issues surrounding that. So the fact that, an outspoken personality like Tyron Woodley, who is out there, I mean, look, everybody's got a direct line to you now with Twitter. They got a direct line to me. I've gotten a death threat. Who really? Am I? Yeah, and it was years ago when I first started writing for Sherdog, so it must have been like 2007 or 8. It was on AIM. It was on AOL Instant Messenger. That's how long ago it is. But, I mean, that's the hive mind of the internet. Like, it's inescapable. Louis C.K. got rid of his Twitter because of it. Ronda Rousey has someone running her Twitter. She's been off of it. Like, I mean, there's a reason that people step away from it. It is too much in a lot of ways, especially for these athletes. Man, Colin Kaepernick, right? So it's kind of adjacent to what we're talking about here with Woodley. Colin Kaepernick was voted the number one most hated player in the NFL. Ben Roethlisberger was number five. Now, Colin Kaepernick spoke out against police brutality, and that's pretty much what he's been doing. He's been protesting, of a real issue in America. Ben Roethlisberger, has been accused of rape twice. So you're basically telling me that the rapist is number five, but the guy who's speaking out on real social issues and standing up for basic dignity is someone that, we should all hate more than anyone else. It's like we really are living in a backwards time. So I feel for Woodley in that sense. Like, he's been someone that when he came in the sport, because of his athletic background, his All-American status at University of Missouri, the fact that you saw his power right away – I mean, Strikeforce groomed him to be a champion. He almost came up on that in Strikeforce. And, years later, he ends an all-time great run by Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler had an amazing run that you cannot understate how incredible it was. He went from a journeyman Robbie Lawler, someone who you would say wasted his potential, arguably, to someone who is a surefire UFC Hall of Famer. and Tyron Woodley had the fastest knockout, the fastest finish in UFC welterweight history. I mean, we should be giving this guy all the credit in the world. We should be really intrigued as to how his career is going to shake out from here now that he's crossed over into that championship realm and is looking to establish his own legacy. Yet here we are having to hear him respond to death threats, having people tell him to shut up and get in line and do what the UFC says.
Yeah. Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. We'll move off of 205. I did want to ask you real quick, were you as entertained, maybe not the right word, or just befuddled by some of these quote unquote press questions at 205, the people thanking the promoters? I don't know. I've been to plenty of press conferences, both MMA, regular sports, everything. I can't get over why people would publicly say thank you for doing this if they're a member of the media. It's not your job to thank them. It's your job just to ask a question, move on. And then the guy at the end, that he was posing being a reporter and then clearly was just a fan, and then they gave the mic back to him to ask another question. I'm like, what is going on here? I don't know. I was bothered by that probably more than some people, but I don't know what you thought about that.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up, and I'm sorry, you know, I can get ranting on the politics and, you know, the issues everything.
It's good.
But I just can't help myself. You're absolutely right. The media, look, we've seen it. We've lived it. You know, I thankfully can say I try to separate myself where I'm not a part of this problem. It really is a problem because the UFC has been able to create a culture in terms of the media and how they come down on media and how fans perceive media and how fighters treat media. I mean, all across the board. And to me, it's a microcosm of problems with media in general. And you know, again, you could go back to the politics on that. But to stay on point here, these people who are saying this to the promoter need to understand that it is not their job to sell pay-per-views. It's not your job. It's not my job. I mean, if you're doing your job correctly as a journalist, you're someone that people hate. You know, you're someone that no one would even want to hand you a microphone, you know, but they would have to because that's the way that, you know, these things are supposed to operate. It's the freedom of press, which is essential to a functioning democracy, which is why it is, even as silly as MMA might seem at times and as silly as it is, these athletes take real risks. They are, you know, if you look at it from a labor politics standpoint, what is the price of your cognitive function, of your brain, of the ability to recognize your wife, to kiss your kids? I mean, that's what the NFL is battling right now. And make no mistake, that will be a battle waged with the UFC, in mixed martial arts, Bellator, any promoter. So when you're a media person and you're going out there and you're going to bat and you're kowtowing and kissing ass, you're really walking a line that you shouldn't be. And I mean, we really saw, I think, the worst of this with the CM Punk thing. You know, the CM Punk thing was a very, very obvious, glaring example where nobody should co-sign. I didn't. You know, I had to do a special for 2 hours talking about it. And in no way did I ever think, and I hope nobody got the impression, that CM Punk should be fighting the UFC. Now, I could say I respect the guy because I do, because he trained and, you know, he went in there and he took his ass whooping and things like that. But at the end of the day, like, people die in combat sports. Pritchard Colon, promising young boxer, has been in a coma for like 18 months. And he was just an up-and-comer. Chris Eubank Jr. almost killed someone in a boxing fight in England. Conor McGregor's teammate killed someone in Ireland in regional MMA. ONE FC has had a death. We almost saw a live death in Bellator with Dada 5000. And then Kimbo Slice had heart irregularities, and he died shortly after. CM Punk could have died. If Mickey Gall went in there and was Ben Askren and just held him out and just beat the crap out of him, and you had a negligent ref, we could be talking about the obituary of Phil Brooks. So to answer your initial point here, the media is wildly irresponsible, and it's a cultural problem that needs to change. If we are a big-time sport now, we need to have, you know, the comparable media to it. I mean, hell, the T-Mobile Arena doesn't even have a media room. Like that is where we stand with this dynamic of, you know, you billion-dollar entities, promoters, sports leagues with these billion-dollar venues raking in millions, billions of dollars, and, you know, the dissenting voices that could be there to try and create any semblance of checks and balances don't even have a place to work. You know, I mean, try to make a living in media, things like that. Like, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So, yeah, this press conference was particularly disturbing because it is a landmark moment, and we need to have that level of professionalism.
Yeah, my hope is that at some point with this new ownership group that I'm okay, I guess, with fans being at the press conference a little bit, even though I think they can be a little bit distracting. I think they do add a little bit to the crazy atmosphere. I just don't like that they're like that last guy. Like, I just don't understand how he was allowed. Like, they're like, how is he allowed to ask a question? Right. I mean, this should have been like,
no, it just, is so obvious. That is the most MMA thing ever. Yeah. You know, the UFC keeps media from asking questions by having Megan O'Leary lead, you know, fight week events, you know, where she asks the questions, and then they'll take a question or two or a few from the fans. And then the media doesn't have the opportunity to ask questions as a result of those two things. And this has been a concerted effort. I really think it started around Nick Diaz versus Carlos Condit. So in that UFC 140 something range, 2012, about the last 4 years, the UFC has really ramped up that concerted effort to control the voices. And, you know, it all came to a head at UFC 199 with the Ariel Helwani situation, you know? And so we could talk about that all day. And that's almost a separate, we could literally do a separate show on media relations within combat sports, you know, and sports in general. I mean, the UFC has been a fascinating example because, yeah, how does that happen? How do you let that guy ask a question? But at the same time, I've been in so many press conferences, so many fight week events, you know, where you're doing the scrums or, you know, things like that. And I look and I go, how did that person get to ask a question? Where are they qualified? And I really love independent hip hop. I really love hip hop, the spirit of it. And I did an interview with Immortal Technique once, who was an excellent political rapper. But, you know, he was telling me, I don't care if I do an interview with, you know, hiphopblog.com day one, because that person has an opportunity because I did an interview with them and it gets my message out no matter what. So that is the very true to spirit, the, you know, hey, anybody can do this, you know, and I respect anybody trying to do it element to it. But at the same time, if you're that day one blogger, if you're that day one person, take a look around. There are plenty of examples. I just watched a thing on Studs Terkel last night. You know what I mean? Like, there is a long history of excellent media members in all walks of life from all different backgrounds in America and across the world. So for this international sport to have such a, you know, I guess lackluster media. I mean, is that being too kind to call us lackluster?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's still evolving. And I think it's because, and I've said this before, is that the sport and the internet and MMA all kind of started growing up at the same time or trying to grow up at the same time. And I think early on is like, let anyone cover us, right? Let's just get someone to cover us. Then all of a sudden the big boys started covering a little bit. And then some of the people like the Sure Dogs said some stuff UFC didn't like. So they're like, well, we're not going to let you in. And then it's just this kind of like weird like thing in between where it's like, what is a reputable outlet? What is a reputable journalist? What's a reputable columnist? Because everyone seemingly has a blog and a voice and things like that. It's like, how do you pick out the ones that are really in this to make it better? It's just a kind of weird evolutionary time. And who knows if IMG, WME is going to change things or just how do they get credentials. I know it's people have some concerns about that. It's still kind of an embryonic time when it comes to MMA and media. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, we need an MMA media association or union of some sort for there to be, you know, rules and regulations. I mean, look, there needs to be an education process. I had a real issue with a local paper here in the Bay Area. And so you're talking about the Bay Area. It's one of the biggest markets in the country. It's actually a very thriving market. And they were just doing the poorest coverage of the UFC. And it's of no fault of, you know, the writer, the intern, the, you know, the kid who's working for free, who's, you know, trying to do it for himself. But it is their fault for attaching their name to that, to not edit things, to have factual inconsistencies. You know, I mean, this is all very basic. That would have been unacceptable in 2008. You know, when Roger Huerta was on Sports Illustrated and the UFC was still this new thing where everybody had to write these stories about what this is. We are so far past that. And I think, you know, look, at the end of the day, there's people taking pictures with fighters, you know, calling them, you know, different names of friends or brothers or whatever it is, things like that. I mean, when you see that and you wonder why the sport is the way it is, well, you know, in a lot of cases, there you go. That's why. At the same time, you know, if you're someone who's just starting and you have a blog, but you conduct yourself professionally, then I welcome you. You know, it's like it is a case by case basis, and media overall is a different thing. Like, there are people out there who are social media people. They're not journalists. You know what I mean? And I think people want to make their own distinctions about that a lot of times. We are evolving as a media landscape, so it is going to change. It is going to be different. But journalistic standards will never go away. They never should go away. If they do go away, we are going to be living in a broken democracy, or we are living in a broken democracy, or you're just going to get, you know, the UFC stance at all times. And let's face it, that's not healthy for fighters. It's not healthy for media. It's not even healthy for the UFC. The UFC shoots themselves in the foot a lot. I mean, Vitor Belfort, anybody? Like, do we really need to go over the history of this?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's something that's going through all walks of life, politics, all other sports as well, wrestling around the same issue. I want to see if you had any leftover thoughts from this past weekend. Obviously, Cyborg fighting in Brazil, the whole weight cutting thing leading up to that. She got in the cage, ended up looking pretty good in there, winning via, you know, second round knockout or TKO, whatever it was. And kind of moving on with whatever is going to be next for her. I mean, the whole event, there was a lot of like stuff to not really kind of pay attention to, some other things that are of interest. Any leftover thoughts in this past weekend?
Yeah, I mean, following up on, you know, what I mentioned about the Ultimate Fighter Live season, do not ever make Chris Cyborg fight at 140 pounds or anything lower than 145 pounds. I mean, she's bigger than former 155-pound champion Frankie Edgar. She's, you know, like as big as Gray Maynard, you know, like she is a large person. I stood next to her. I'm 6'1", about 215, you know, I get my workouts in. She's not small. You know, I've stood next to heavyweights and been like, oh, that guy's not that big. 205ers, middleweights, whatever. Chris Cyborg, as a woman, big girl, like very dense muscle. Muscle weighs more than fat. Like, she's not cutting in a healthy way because there is no way to cut that weight more healthy. And I think the Cyborg thing is particularly egregious because there's – look, you could put her in catchweight fights, fine. Have it be at 150 pounds. You know, is there no one there? You don't know who Lena Landsberg is anyway.
Right.
You know, like not only that, this is a biological issue. Like you are potentially ruining – a woman's opportunity to bear children, which every woman should have the choice whether or not they want to do that. But if you're ruining it because your organs are going to fail, because you're being asked to fight at a weight for no reason, honestly, the reason has to be that they hope that she dries herself out enough that someone clips her and then the Ronda Rousey fight goes away. Right. You know, it has to be to protect Ronda Rousey because even if Ronda – look, Dana White at the UFC 205 press conference said, when Ronda's ready, she'll call me. What happened when George St. Pierre, the greatest welterweight we've ever seen, said, you know what? I just got hit by Johnny Hendricks in the head for 25 minutes. I think I'm going to take some time off. I'm probably going to retire. Dana White stood there and said he owed it to the UFC. He owed it to Johnny Hendricks. He owed it to the fans. He buried George. He's still burying George 3 years later. So the idea that Ronda Rousey could just call up and say, hey, I'm ready to fight. Not Cyborg, but I'm ready to fight. It's like, look, you cannot force these weight cuts upon people, especially with USADA coming in, taking away the IVs and all the issues that are around weight cutting now, which I think have been positive. You know, fighters love the earlier weigh-ins. The state of California as a commission has really stepped up. We need this collective ability to step up. Yet for some reason on Fox Sports 1 on Saturday night, we're going to watch Cyborg Santos get in there at a weight that's completely irrelevant. And she's basically at the brink of death. Like, we really need to understand this is that serious. You could say that it's exaggeration. You could say anything like that. But let's be real. ONE FC, there was a weight-cutting death. Wrestling, weight-cutting deaths. All these things are not okay. So the idea that you could just brush it off and say, oh, let's flip the channel if you don't like it, or, you know, don't watch, or whatever the issues that come up that people try and keep you from bringing this up, you have to speak on the fact that Cyborg Santos, there's no reason she should be cutting this weight.
Yeah, I think I said this last week. I think the UFC realizes that if they can't find someone in the cage that's going to be competitive with her, they want to have the competitive balance be the fact that you have to make this weight and we're going to make you physically pay for it, which is so messed up. But I think that they're really, if you, again, the 10,000 foot view back, there's no reason she should fight 140 pounds because it's almost like they're like, well, it's between 145 and 135, and that they both exist, so let's do that. It's like, just have her fight at 145 or 150. Just have something. If you're going to do a catch weight, have it at a catch weight that's not going to, like, almost kill her. And you're right. I think, you know, and we're not privy to every little thing behind the scenes with all these fighters trying to make weight. I guarantee, and you know this too, I guarantee that we have been, like, an hour away, a bad sauna session away from having our first UFC death due to weight cutting. Look how many guys have been hospitalized, and girls have been hospitalized because they've had an issue cut weight, or they got sick or something like that. It's like, I think we've been, like, razor's edge close to a catastrophe that would, I mean, who knows where it'd be if that had happened. But it's you're right. The weight cutting thing, it's just they keep running so close to the edge, and one of these days it's going to catch up with them. It's not going to be good.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, just this year, Ross Pearson fights on short notice, right, against Will Brooks?
Yep.
So Ross Pearson is doing the media scrum for that, and he basically tells us all that he had to take some time off and that he had a lingering issue from cutting to 145 where his intestines were, you know, twisted up and there was a lot of damage there. And, you know, now that's behind him and, you know, he's feeling better that he's at 55 and, you know, so forth. But that cut really did, you know, what could be irreversible damage to his health. Now, that's just something that was said publicly. Fighters do not speak about this publicly. They don't. They know why, you know, why would they? And, I will share that there's a fighter on the Dan Henderson season of The Ultimate Fighter. So right before UFC 100, right, when he knocked out Bisping.
Yep.
So 2009, a fighter was carried to the weigh-in on The Ultimate Fighter from cutting weight. He was carried to the weigh-in, and I don't want to say who it was or whatever because I don't know if he'd be okay with it. I mean, he did it in an interview with me, you know, so much long ago. But I'll never forget it because did that make in the edit? Did you see that on Ultimate Fighter that they had to stuff someone into a van and then the teammates had to carry them onto the scale? You know, like, let's remember this is the sport in which Gabe Rudiger tried to create drama with a failed weight cut on the Ultimate Fighter. Like, it's become so comical. We're so desensitized. We see mixed martial arts fighters the way that we see action heroes. You think that they go home at the end of the night and, you know, it's like an actor, like everything's okay. No, these guys go home, these girls, they piss blood. They don't remember where they are. Matt Brown just said after getting knocked out by Jake Ellenberger, he was in a room for 2 weeks in complete darkness because he couldn't handle sunlight.
Yeah. Crazy.
Absolutely insane. It's the craziest of the crazy.
Speaking of, Jose Aldo claims he wants to retire. He's fed up with all this stuff. He wanted to be released from his contract. He wants to retire. We're in a very weird spot. He has been in a weird spot with the UFC for a long time, and I think probably this week was the straw that broke the camel's back. Do you think we'll see Jose Aldo in the UFC again? Does this get squared away, or is he going to stick to his guns and both sides are going to be stubborn and we're not going to see one of the best ever at 145 do his thing again?
Man, that's a tough question. You know, I've heard a lot of dissenting opinions on this now. Steve Cofield, SiriusXM, said, you know what? Aldo made the wrong move. He should have just said, I'll chase Conor up to 55. There's a lot to be said for that. But you have to look at it from the fighter's perspective, too. Jose Aldo, what he did for the UFC mixed martial arts, I mean, he didn't lose for, what, 7 years, 8 years? Mm-hmm. You know, he ran through everybody. One of the all-time great highlight reels, the first ever featherweight champion in history, fought in front of 55,000 people, you know, really taking out the best of the best. Did the UFC a favor fighting for this, you know, paperweight title of an interim championship against Frankie Edgar on UFC 200, which that was one of the only good fights on that card. The UFC put all their eggs in the John Jones and Brock Lesnar baskets, and you saw how that played out. Yep. Complete nightmare that, you know, potentially was a black mark on the sport, or, you know, is a black mark on the sport. Jose Aldo has been amazing, but the UFC doesn't sell good guys. If you don't speak English, they'll take the gas off your push. You know, we've seen all these things, and it really breaks down to, in a respectable sport, you know, Jose Aldo accomplishes what he accomplishes. He gets knocked out by Conor McGregor, 13 seconds, all-time great KO by McGregor. All the credit to him, no doubt about it. Not a lucky punch. He did what he had to do. It's an incredible heist by McGregor. But at the end of the day, Jose Aldo should have an immediate rematch clause in his contract. Do UFC fighters get that ever? Have you ever heard that? Immediate rematch clause? Ronda Rousey will get it because Ronda Rousey could call the UFC whenever she wants, and she could walk in the door and fight for a title. Doesn't matter if she's doing Lord knows what, you know, making Lifetime movies, what have you. Jose Aldo deserves every ounce of respect that's out there, and people are so quick to forget. You know, I mean, he beat Ricardo Lamas, and Dana was, you know, 5 minutes later saying, who is this guy? This guy isn't out there. He's not hungry. It's like, are you kidding me? This guy, I watched him double fly knee Cub Swanson's face off. I saw him almost literally kill Uriah Faber with leg kicks. Yep. I just saw him in his most recent fight take out the best version of Frankie Edgar I've ever seen. Frankie Edgar streaking. Frankie Edgar, who could beat Conor McGregor. You know, like, the genius of Conor McGregor is that he got you know, his top two contenders at 145 pounds to pick each other off. So if he ever goes back, that's not a pressing issue the way it once was. And now with this squabble, and I get why Aldo's pissed. I totally am for the Eddie Alvarez Conor McGregor fight. Like I said, it's a perfect fight to headline Madison Square Garden. Aldo could wait, but there's no guarantees. This is a dotted line business. Unless you have it in ink, unless your lawyers have looked over it, unless it's all set in stone, you're screwed. And when you're screwing over a guy like Jose Aldo, who's comes from nothing, has given everything to the sport, done it so well, done it so right, you know, just in terms of being that babyface champion, that consummate professional. And let's face it, Dana just said it about Roy Nelson. Let's bury Roy Nelson. That's not coincidental language. They will bury Jose Aldo. They'll bury any fighter they've ever had. Hell, they bury Conor McGregor when the time is right. When negotiating is heated, they'll say, you know what, Conor McGregor, who cares about him? We got other stuff going on. Conor needs to be on time. He needs to respect your time. He needs to respect our time. Really? Really?
Finally, they're actually – he's worried about respecting the media's time, or the media who he says he can't stand, and all this stuff. And, yeah, that's – yeah, that's typical Dana talk. I would not be surprised to see this worked out, but I have this also have this feeling it could be like a year, because both sides are just going to dig in their heels and be like, I'm good, you know. And that's the thing with some of these fighters that do have a little bit of money, you know, and hopefully, although he made some good coin from the McGregor fight, and then also, you know, a little bit from the Edgar fight, that maybe he's like, I don't need to fight anymore. But it'd be a shame if we didn't get to see, you know, I feel like there's still a lot more of his story to be told after that McGregor fight, you know, with a rematch or his own kind of new path against some new contenders, maybe go up in weight, you know, that type of thing, maybe the chase for McGregor. But I think he just feels disrespected, and you laid out a lot of reasons why that's a good case. There's a case for that. There's one thing I wanted to bring up, because he's his teammate, and also talk about weight cutting. Henan Burrell fought this last weekend. I wonder, he just did not look good to me. You know, just his past couple of fights, just I'm not buying that he's going to be a title contender at 145. And I wonder if the years of the tough cuts at 135 have, you know, sapped him of that ability, that those flashes he had for so long, that long run. I just wonder if maybe, you know, the Aldo stuff, the UFC stuff, and then, you know, the weight cutting. I wonder where his career kind of goes from here.
I never bought into the Hennen Burrell hype. Yeah. Now, obviously, he's very legitimate, but the pound for pound talk and, you know, everything like that, I just never saw it with Burrell. Definitely talented, definitely a tough guy. You know, don't want to sleep on him. You know, I think he really struggled against Mitch Gagnon out in Brazil. You know, obviously, he hasn't had solid performances since then. So I don't see much of a future for him in terms of the high level. Certainly will be an exciting fighter as long as he decides to fight. It's a rough business, man. And that's what people don't realize. Like, I use the Luke Rockhold, Michael Bisping 2 example, right? UFC 199. Luke Rockhold underestimates Michael Bisping on one night. He should absolutely walk through Michael Bisping with no issues whatsoever, with his eyes closed, really.
Yep.
You know, like, he could be style on Michael Bisping any which way, but he didn't take him seriously. Michael Bisping knocks him out. Luke Rockhold may never be the same again, and that could be true for Jose Aldo, but we've seen Aldo back in the cage. Aldo rebounded perfectly. You know, he fought 5 rounds, tested against a tough fighter. I mean, just because you get knocked out doesn't mean you stop being the greatest when you're a Jose Aldo level fighter. And that's what the short term memory of this, man, it just kills me. Like, people go, oh, Aldo, screw him. I don't care. I don't want to see him anymore anyway. It's like, really? You don't want to see the best? I thought we're here to see the best. You want to keep watching CM Punk take a dive, essentially, you know, in a mismatch that's so egregious, it's basically a fix? Fine, but I'm here to see the Jose Aldo's of the world. And if he's not fighting, it's an absolute shame. And you know what? There is precedence. I mean, there's a lot of cases you can make against the UFC. If he's able – Randy Couture didn't win the battle. It doesn't mean that the UFC will win every time in the courtroom. Right. If Jose Aldo could free himself from the UFC, I mean, he could get an independent person like an Oscar De La Hoya type to throw an event around him, people will watch that, and they will watch it more because he left the UFC or he won in court, whatever it is, or Bellator or Japan or wherever it might be. But, man, these guys, they deserve that element of respect. You know, we're talking about Cyborg Santos. There's that clip of Dana White strutting around making fun of Cyborg Santos, bullying her, you know, for looking like a man in his estimation. And the media, you know, back to so many of the topics we talked about, the media just standing there and letting Dana just bully her like that, you know, at this, I think it was John Jones Teixeira with that press conference when Dana's out there saying that she looked like Wanderlei Silva in a dress. Yeah. It's like, do you wonder why these fighters are pissed off? Do you wonder why they're like, hey, I don't want to fight for the UFC? You know, Khabib Nurmagomedov, was it necessary to throw Khabib Nurmagomedov in this as a pawn? You know, the guy's – he's undefeated. You know, he's the future of Russian MMA, which is obviously a huge market. The guy is elite level. He puts his time in. He's just a nasty fighter who, you know, you should be pumping up as the future, not going, hey, guess what? We're going to throw you by the wayside real quick. Are you cool with that? Okay, cool. You know, it's just like any number of things. I always go back to the Dana White promo on Dave Meltzer. Didn't you just get fired from Yahoo, Dave? It's like, what? Like – dude, he's been here longer than you've been, like, a lot. And it's just any endless amount of things. It's like, MMA makes my head hurt when you get to these Aldo kind of situations where it's like, look, maybe Jose Aldo didn't handle this situation correctly. Maybe he should say, well, you know what? I could wait. That's fine. I'll fight Conor in 2017. Maybe that's what he's going to do. Maybe he has to do that to try and get some freedom from his contract or gain some leveraging power back. But the fact that he's the greatest 145er that's ever lived should be enough for us to go, all right, well, let's just make this happen. You know, let's just see what happens, because it is about the respect. We've heard it from a lot of fighters. It's about the respect. Sometimes the money doesn't matter. From a guy like Jose Aldo, who grew up, you know, in abject poverty and some of the worst circumstances, I believe it's about respect.
Yep.
You know, we watched him put on his first suit. That's why he's someone we should care about, because he literally has made it. He's come from nothing and he's done the best for himself. And now we're supposed to believe that we should disrespect him. So I know that's completely off the Hennen Burrell thing, but I mean,
it's good. It's good. So let's round the bend with go ahead to the Pacific Northwest. I know we're, you know, you're very riled up. So let's take a next break to one of the weirdest cities in the country. You know, go to Voodoo Donuts and all that stuff. Take a walk through the Rose Gardens, and so this fight, this event coming up on Saturday is kind of a tag of catch weight. The whole, I mean, there's been so many guys that have missed weight today for the show, including both in the main event and in the co-main event. So John Lineker, John Dodson, great fight coming up at bantamweight. John Lineker misses weight again, and I think he's officially set a record for the most weight misses in UFC history. And this is, you know, they want to give him a title shot at some division very badly. And every single time he gets so close, he did this at flyweight, now here, he just can't make the weight. And I don't know what to make of him anymore. I don't know what's going on with this guy.
Yeah, it's a rough thing, man. He's missed weight five times. You can't really continue to give the guy any leeway. I think the previous record holder for that was like three. So, yeah. You know, he's gone above and beyond in missing weight. It's one of those things where I don't want to really get on him because I don't know the circumstances. You know, like if you miss weight.
And we were just talking about all the weight cuts a minute ago. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but it's like if you miss weight, for the most part, like this is your job. You know how to do it. You know, you have resources to help you make weight. I mean, even hell, if you're just copying the guy in front of you, you have a pretty decent shot at doing it. Right. But these guys go into fights injured and they cannot afford literally to not fight. And I wonder if that's the case with Lineker in this situation. I don't know if the four previous weight cuts had anything to do with that, or if he's just a habitual line stepper. He's just a guy who eats donuts when he gets to Portland and, you know, decides that he's not going to stick to his diet and that his team is trying to corral him and say, hey, you know what? You need to do what's right. And he's going, screw you. I'm the boss here. I'm paying for you to be here. This is my show. I'm going to eat whatever I want. I'll cut however I want. Or, you know what? I won't cut at all, even though I'm in a new division. I mean, I just don't really want to get into it. It's completely opposite of the Cyborg Santos thing. But yeah, you got to make weight, man. If you're going to fight for a title, you'll never get a shot. And I think he is well positioned to get a shot if he beats a guy like Dodson. And now, you know, you're putting yourself in quicksand because you beat a guy like John Dodson, who's incredibly dangerous, a top guy himself, someone who could be fighting for the belt. You're going to be fighting another guy. You're going to be in another contender fight. And that is one more step you're adding that you potentially didn't need to take to get to the belt.
Yeah, exactly. I think in cage, I mean, I'm going with Lineker in this one. I think, you know, I think the power's there. I think he's on a nice little run right now. And it's just unfortunate because there's this kind of this asterisk with it with, you know, again, you're right. He's going to have to go through another fight in order to earn that title shot that I think a lot of people think that he may have earned already or be close to already anyway. But I love Lineker's power. I kind of wonder where Dodson's at. I think he's kind of the injury, took a lot out of him. I don't really kind of know where Dodson is at, you know, that strong flyweight run. I think it's kind of a little ways back in the rear view. And yeah, I like Lineker's power in this one and him being patient enough to catch Dodson and maybe knock him out. What do you think?
You know, I definitely agree with what you're saying. All those things about Lineker. He's someone you always want to see fight. I just, with the weight cut and missing weight again, and he's won fights where he's missed weight, you know, it's like, doesn't really set him back too much. I just think that Dodson, being a Greg Jackson's guy, he's well prepared. He's got good power. He's got great speed. And I think he's got a wrestling edge here. And the Greg Jackson strategy, you know, the fact that, look, if you miss weight, I think there's going to be a dip in your cardio at some point, especially in a 5-round main event. So I was going into this week and this weekend looking at Lineker to win the fight. Now I'm going to go with Dodson as a result of what transpired today on the scales.
Interesting. Yeah, Lineker comes in this one winning 5 in a row, and Dodson has won 3 or 4 of his last 5. Coming in this one, we then go to the co-main event. Speaking of former Bellator lightweight champions and Eddie Alvarez, we have former Bellator lightweight champion Ill Will Brooks returns back to the octagon and fighting against Alex Oliveira. Brooks made weight. Alex Oliveira did not, missing quite badly. Catch weight of 161.5 pounds. Talking about these new weight divisions UFC has all over the place. And, you know, this is again, weight cuts aside, this is an opportunity for Brooks to really kind of, again, make his name in a division that has a lot of big names in it. And the attention is going to be obviously on the McGregors and Alvarez of the world. But and you know, Khabib Nurmagomedov and Michael Johnson coming up at that MSG show. But Will Brooks, he has an opportunity if he starts kind of beating some of these guys. You know, he beat Ross Pearson. Maybe he picks up a good win here to kind of slowly make his way up, and maybe with another big win after this, could start to kind of put his name in title contention. But big opportunity here for Will Brooks to keep on going.
Yeah, you got to look at the seriousness of a fighter who's held a title like Will Brooks. You know, that was not an easy title to get. He had to beat Michael Chandler twice.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Chandler is dangerous. He's decorated. He's been in those firefights. He's taken out the current UFC champion in Eddie Alvarez. So for Will Brooks to be that guy, I mean, American Top Team, that speaks for itself. He's definitely someone to watch. I didn't think he had a great performance, in his debut. That happens. You know, we saw it with Eddie Alvarez, and look where he is now. So I think it's the only reason now that Lineker's missed weight and that contender fight pretty much goes down the drain at 135. Will Brooks is the show for the UFC in Portland this weekend. And I think the conversation is always going to be there, but it's so inane. It's so infuriating. Strikeforce, Bellator, you know, any other organization, those fighters are just as legit. We've seen it over and over again. I don't know how many times it needs to be proven. Take Will Brooks seriously. Will Brooks is someone to watch because he's young, he's athletic, he's talented, he's proven. I mean, hell, he avenged his only loss. I mean, that's about as perfect as a record you could get in MMA is when you've won good fights against top elite level fighters in championship rounds, defended a title, you know, fought in multiple organizations, come from a great camp, are young. Like, he's got everything going for him. He knows how to talk. You know, he's out there on Twitter. Definitely intriguing in the lightweight division, man. And, you know, Michael Johnson's out there. That's a rivalry that seems to be in the making. And, you know, he could be looking at a fight with Tony Ferguson, Rafael Dos Anjos, Khabib Nurmagomedov. Will Brooks, you know, he gets to showcase here, and it looks like it will be that his opponent missed weight. Got to go with the Americans over the Brazilians who are missing weight here.
Yeah, and Will Brooks, it's the rare case of people doing or organizations doing the right thing in Bellator releasing him. Granted, they didn't really do the right thing with just kind of, you know, abandoning him to begin with. But I'm glad they released him. I'm glad UFC signed him. And yeah, I think I'm glad that he's getting the opportunity at the UFC level to really kind of see what we have here in a prospect and what we have here in a guy that's been a champion. And he's going to get his opportunity. And I think that's a really great thing.
Yeah, you know, and you got to be happy for guys like that when, Eddie Alvarez, similar situation. If a fighter is unhappy, I don't care what organization they're in. I want to see them get to a point where they're happy with their career. Because let's face it, these guys, they don't get paid enough to take the beatings in training, let alone in an actual fight. You know, there's no safety net for these guys. They're walking a tightrope, and it's a dangerous, dangerous game. That's why Conor McGregor's been so brilliant, because, you know, he controls every facet of the game. He's not taking any risk. He's not willing to take, much like a Floyd Mayweather, unlike every other fighter on the UFC roster. You know, all these guys don't have that power, and, I love to see the fighters have that say. It's like, does it make it more like boxing and more chaotic sometimes? Sure, but, you know, there are guys who you've never heard of getting, you know, 750 grand, 1.5 million to be opponents. Like the guy that just fought Canelo Alvarez, or the guy that just fought Andre Ward. Barely know their names, but if you're an opponent for an elite level guy, and Nate Diaz said it best after he beat Gray Mander in the rematch. He says, do you think that guy got enough to take that beating? Absolutely not. And we've seen what that's done to Gray Maynard, you know, deteriorated since. And, you know, Gray Maynard's a father. You got to wish the best for these fighters, these athletes, because, I mean, they're down a rabbit hole, man. It is a dangerous game that's completely thankless.
Yep. The only other fight on this show that really stands out, because it's a crossroad fight, and I love crossroads fights, are between veterans Nate Marquardt and Tamron McCrory. The headline, the UFC Fight Pass portion, and anything else? Any guys in the show that are really standing out to you?
Not at all, man. I barely know what's on this card, and you know, I'll admit it. Like, it's just too much.
It's a crazy run, man. I mean, it's like every single weekend there seems to be one of these shows, and it sounds like the saturation discussion that we all had a year ago we're right back at. It's like week after week that he shows that there's a lot of guys that we don't know a lot about, and a lot of guys and girls, but there's only a few people that really kind of are needle movers in terms of attention, contendership, stakes, and all that.
Yeah, and that's a big issue why I got up in arms a lot of time, because there's the needle mover conversation. That guy shouldn't be asking for that much money. He doesn't sell pay-per-views. You hear a lot about Demetrius Johnson. It's like, look, if the UFC actually tried to get these guys over, if they really tried to, you know, invest and get the mainstream, get the casual audience to care about these fighters, they can, you know. But it's different if you're doing that for, you know, let's say – they have 10 divisions now. If you get 100 people over, you know, the top 10 fighters in each division, the people will be fighting for the belts. But they have 500 people on their roster. And, I mean, man, most of the UFC staff is just on a plane all the time. And where do they do their work? You know, like, it's a tough thing for everybody. And, you know, I'm not saying to disrespect the athletes, that I don't know what's really happening in Portland. But, look, if you took Portland – and you took this Chris Cyborg card that just happened in Brazil, you combine those two cards, you got an okay card out of those two cards. So, I mean, yeah, the rising tide lifts all ships at the high end with Conor McGregor and the pay-per-views and the year the UFC's having, but there's a lot of this filler stuff, and it's filler, man. I don't know how to describe it otherwise. Like, I want to see Will Brooks fight. I do want to see Dodson and Lineker, you know, and I'm always good for some prospects all around the world. I don't care if you don't speak English. You know, I want to see the best of the best. And, you know, it takes some time. I understand the UFC's got to, you know, invest in these guys and have the footage and, you know, this and that. But, man, it's just a rough business. It's a rough business, just like pro wrestling is, just like boxing is. It's hard to get people. I mean, I'm a single guy, and I can't keep up with all this. Like, what about a guy who with a wife, you know? Or what about a female fan who, like, needs to take care of, you know, whatever she's got to take care of? Like, any number of things, man. You could slice and dice it and say, you know what? There's just too many shows to really keep up with everything.
I agree. But we know, while there's a lot of filler, you are the opposite of filler, my man. You are all killer, and we want to give you a chance to plug where any stuff that's coming up, the radio show, written stuff, all that good stuff. The floor is yours.
Well, I greatly appreciate you having me on, and thank you for putting up on our ranting. That was a great outro there you gave me. So you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Acosta is Legend, ACOSTA is Legend. And then also I'll be doing Sirius XM Fight Club next Friday. That'll be right before UFC 204. From 11 to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So I'll be with Steve Cofield on that. And then the following day, I'll be back on Sirius XM, Channel Rush 93, home for combat sports on Sirius. I will be with Ryan McKinnell of Yahoo Sports. He and I will be doing the pre-fight live leading up to the FS1 prelims of UFC 204 out in Manchester. We'll be talking all things Dan Henderson and Michael Bisping for that middleweight title fight. Great legacy fight. Very curious to see. Not exactly the most sporting, but hey, these guys have earned it. So you can check me out there. And then Sirius XM, Rush 93, all that stuff's on demand on the Sirius XM app in case you ever miss any of our shows. Travis Barker is actually on the UFC 204 pre-fight live with us, the drummer of Blink-182. He's been stopping by. He'll be with us all year for every show. So that's all I got, man. I love writing. I'm looking for a good place to get my pen going. So if you know anybody, let me know. But I got some stuff hopefully coming down the pipe with Sure Dog. I'm still freelancing for them every once in a while. But, man, it gets busy with all these cards, and I'm trying to see Shinsuke Nakamura and NXT soon. I got a lot going on, man. I'm trying to do it all, and I'm so grateful to everybody who's listening to this. I don't know why you would listen to me rant for an hour, but, Josh, you did a great job, man. It's truly a pleasure, and anytime you want me on, I will gladly make some time for you, brother.
Well, it makes it easy when you have great guests. And next time, I guarantee we'll do it during a non-fight week, so we can talk a little bit more pro wrestling. We'll do that. So again, big thanks, Danny Acosta. Thanks so much for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out this week.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to getting this out there and letting everybody know. Thank you so much.
All right. Big thanks to Danny Acosta for stopping by. You can listen to him, obviously, on Sirius Rush XM 93. He talked about all that, but you can also follow him on Twitter at Acosta is Legend, AcostaIsLegend. 93, the Rush 93 is actually pretty good. I haven't listened to it a little bit, but what I have listened is it's really entertaining stuff, especially if you're one of these people that has, you know, Sirius in the car, or you're doing the streaming thing at home and need some new stuff to listen to. Their MMA shows are pretty good. So definitely check those out and check Danny out. Especially if you choose to subscribe, let Danny know you did it because of this show. I don't get any financial kickback out, unfortunately, but hey, you never know. Let's see. Nothing really else new to add. We talked about pretty much everything with Danny. Probably the only thing we didn't discuss was the state of Josh Saman, a UFC, I believe, middleweight or welterweight. I can't remember off the top of my head. As of 6 o'clock on Friday, we still don't know an update on his condition. Some stories and reports that came out that he was fighting for his life today due to being found in a quote-unquote unresponsive condition. They won't really have any official news on this yet, and obviously probably by the time you listen to this, we'll have heard something. Obviously, you hope things are well, but the way that you, the fact that there's been no real news or no statement to counteract some of the stuff that's out there now, you kind of have this bad feeling in your stomach that something bad has happened. So we'll kind of let that story play out. I never had interviewed him. I think I'd seen him fight maybe a couple times on some of these undercards. Kind of a, you know, mid-level UFC fighter, but he's really starting to make his name doing a lot of writing, and I think he was doing some podcasts maybe as well, obviously had done some appearances, but really was making an effort to kind of bring fans into what it is like to be a fighter, but do it in a way that is, you know, just talking about like weight cutting stuff. And I remember he was very open about the Reebok stuff and the drug stuff, and really just kind of like the drug testing and just talking a lot about just the mindset of the fighter kind of when all this stuff hits you, and doing so in a way that no one had really done a lot of before. And it was interesting stuff. And you saw a lot of his stories and quotes and so on get retweeted and talked about and all that. So he was clearly doing some good work. I'd read some of his stuff and liked it. And yeah, you hope all's well. And obviously more news on that will be coming, you know, as Twitter goes on this Friday and throughout the weekend. So hopefully all is well with Josh Saman, but unfortunately it doesn't appear to be that way. And with all that said, the show here, I don't think we're going to have a show this week coming up. And the reason for that is the wife's due date is fast nearing and is in fact next week. So that could be happening any day now. So who knows what's going to happen with that. It's my first. So as I've said before, and I have zero idea what we're doing. We're just going to kind of hope for the best and, you know, get to learn how to change diapers really quick. So could be this week, and I'm not going to pull Brian Alvarez and do the show the next day or bring the recording equipment into the hospital. My guess is that the wife might throw the computer out the window and certainly would not like that. So it'll probably be a few weeks until we're back together, and got some pretty good guests lined up, I think, some pro wrestling people, MMA, and obviously there's no shortage of stuff to talk about. We are on the road to UFC 205 in Madison Square Garden. Boy, what a card. What a week it's been, and thank you guys for hanging out and hearing all about it. Thanks to Danny Acosta. Thanks to all you guys for listening, supporting the show. We'll see you around the bend. We'll see you soon. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out, and until next time, insert catchphrase here.